concept. So I'm going to have people sit down real quick. I try to use Hong Kongese style Mandarin, but it doesn't work, so I'm going to stick with English. Okay. But you guys are totally fine to ask questions in Mandarin or Cantonese. I can understand. And if I attempt to answer in a Mandarin, so don't laugh at me, but I'll try. My husband is actually Taiwanese, so I do get practice sometimes with him and my girl. I am from the home of Christ Six. My husband is an English minister there, so I'm he and I, when we were dating, we were actually dating in the W4C. Anybody remember, don't know W4C? The World Christian Chinese Conference in, I don't know, I think Redwood Shore. At that time, we made a commitment to do two things. So he raised his hand to be a minister, a full-time minister. I raised my hand to be a tent maker. And from that point on, I have no idea that's what I've signed up for, is being a pastor's wife and also working at the same time. So that is that's not easy, but it's been a very fulfilling ride. Now, I want to talk about priority today. The fact that you chose to come to this workshop tells me that you see this as an important topic. So I want to thank you for your time. We make priority decisions every day. You know, think about today or even last week, right? Maybe at work. Like, you need to make decision around what project I need to finish by Friday, or which social gathering I want to attend. If you have multiple, you have multiple things that you got invited. Do I want to do that birthday party? I want to go to that skiing trip, whatever, right? You make priorities every day. And it's very important, because the dictionary defined priority as something that you put more value and importance on over an other alternative. So we are bombarded with so many choices in the Bay Area. The simple question is, like, some Christians even struggle going to church because there's so many outdoor activities on Sunday morning that would take their time away. So that's just as an example why priority is important. When I think about priority, there are a few criteria that I use that resonate with me throughout my journey. You know, I've been working for 20 some years, and I hope I don't look like that. But the three things I usually kind of lean on is these three. One is being just very practical. I am a very practical person. When my husband, on my birthday, I told him, don't buy me flowers. One time he did, when we were dating, and Yong Mok Sin, you can joke with, you know, he and I, you know, we go to the same church. He bought me 2 dozens of roses from Costco. And I asked him, why did you buy 2 dozen? Just get one. He's like, it's buy one, get one free. And from that point on, I was like, okay, you don't need to get me roses. There are 4 languages of love for those who read C.S. Lewis. I am like the service type, right? Just dump the garbage, clean the house, hang the clothes. That is the language of love. Don't buy me flowers. They will die. If I want flowers, I'll buy myself. So I'm a very practical person. You know, in Chinese, there's a saying, something like, 你要爱情还有面包, right? Like, do you want just love and no bread, or bread or love, right? I think they're equally important. And the reason I say this is important, because when I grew up in Chicago, I'm a parachute kid, meaning my parents dropped me off in Chicago, we immigrated there, but they went back to Hong Kong. So I grew up with my uncles and aunts. And I was dating casually in college, high school time, and my uncle gave me one really profound advice when it comes to dating. He said, just make sure he has a job. I'm like, make sure he has a job? That's like a very no-brainer, right? I would assume people would get jobs. But not until, you know, when you go through your life, you realize this is not to be taken for granted. A job is a blessing. I have seen people who lose jobs because of restructuring. They lose jobs because they make not so good decisions. They lose job because of health reasons. And the amount of stress they put on the family when one parent or whatever spouse loses a job is huge. So I grew up in a family that is very practical. And to me, just being practical is also very spiritual, because it comes with responsibilities. You know, I have 2 girls. They're freshmen in high school in 6th grade. I chose to stay put with my company right now for over 12 years for very practical reasons, because they are flexible. I have credibility with the company. Although I know there are choices I make that might slow down my career growth or my promotions, but I made those decisions because I know family is more important. And I, you know, those are practical decisions that I made. So think about practical being one criteria. The second one And to me, this is very true most of the time. The second one is passion. Like, what is your passion? Just kind of answer it in your own head. My passion is, I love to bake. I used to read like Martha Stewart or, you know, Betty Crocker, you know, any bakers in the room, like, you know, cookies and stuff. I used to bake a lot, and I always have a dream of opening a cafe and maybe, you know, sell my cookies, and, you know, it doesn't really happen. Or if that doesn't work, maybe I'll do bed and breakfast, right? That my passion is around hospitality, you know, having a place for people to mingle. But passion is something you have to make time for. It doesn't come every day. I mean, even though you have it in the back of your mind, but because you have to put bread on the table, you cannot pursue your passion that to the degree that you want. So when you set priority, you kind of have to think about how much of a passion, how much sacrifice am I making on my passion because of the practical needs? You know, the practical needs is like your, the Maslow hierarchy of needs, right? You know, anybody went to B school, MBA school? MBA school, you know, this is your, the basic needs is your bread. And then when you go up the chain, that is like your aspiration, it's your values and all of that. This is really just your practical, the Maslow hierarchy of needs. So think about the passions. I don't think I have fully realized my passion, but it doesn't mean that you have to suppress it. You know, there are ways for you to do and be on the side, and I have friends who are like amateur photographer. They will do wedding pictures on the weekends, on a Saturday or Monday. Yeah, they will probably lose their weekends, but they enjoy it. And when they are about time to retire, they already have a second career coming up because they already prepared the photography business for the past 10 years while they're an engineer, and now they could be a full-time photographer after they retire. So think about how you can squeeze in your passion in your 9-to-5 or maybe after 9-to-5, but don't entirely suppress it. Now, if you're lucky, one of those that can have both at the same time, like you're doing things that you're really passionate about and they can also make money, that's awesome. You know, my daughter, my little one is an artist, and her dream is to be a stay-at-home wife and a stay-at-home mom and someone who opens a gallery. So I don't know how much of a practical things that she has in her mind, but she's kind of all staying in this kind of like session, the passion only, right? She doesn't understand what it means by putting bread on the table. But just think about the passion. The third one I ask myself is the value. To me, this is not time dependent. This is like true most of the time. This is like you have to make time for. But this one, it has to be you. Like it has to be true all the time. Because your value is your conviction, is what defines you. You know, value could be honesty, doing the right thing, being genuine, don't lie, don't step on people's back. Like these are values. Or even as simple as do not support any initiatives that goes against your religious values. You know, go against the Bible. When you have a strong value and conviction, it makes other things look a lot simpler. You have less struggles because you kind of know this is no brainer. This is like not the honest things to do. You know, simple as, let's say you work for a company. I have a friend who works for a company, startup, and she knows that this upper management is fudging the book, you know, like making sure that the number looks better by fudging the number. And she doesn't feel good about that. And she decides that's not the company I want to work for. It doesn't matter if it puts bread on the table, but I'm going to go elsewhere. So define your value and really stick to that and really trust that God will kind of carry you through. Then you might ask, okay, these are all very philosophical, very fluffy, right? Like, give me some real examples. I think I actually did this talk a couple of months ago in a smaller church, but I hope none of you went to that, so I don't want to feel like I'm repeating. When I think about real life examples, there's, anybody heard of the push and pull factors? Yeah? Push factor and pull factor. Okay. I'm a math major, by the way. I study actuarial science in undergrad, so it's kind of weird why I moved to HR. But anyway, so I love quadrants. I love graphs. I love numbers because when you're, it kind of clarifies kind of what I'm trying to discuss, right? The push factors are those that are internal within your company. So that could be like bad boss, bad teammates, you know, bad commute, not very satisfying, you're just not happy in your current job. So these are the push factors, they're very strong, right? These are the degree of the factors. Now, the pull factors are those external influencing things like, wow, the recruiter's tapping on your shoulders. You have a lot of invites on LinkedIn. You're not happy at all out there. And then you're like, wow. To me, this is like, I call that the clear decision quadrant. I wouldn't say it's a lucky quadrant, but I just say the decision is pretty clear because you don't really have to wrestle as much. It's maybe God is just opening doors for you. If you're in this quadrant, have faith and try new things, right? I was in this quadrant when I started my career in San Francisco. I was a consultant at a firm, and I had to turn in something at 8 in the morning. They always kind of ask the new grad to do all this analytical stuff, and I couldn't get done. So I ended up staying over the night until 2 or 3, and then I ended up sleeping on the floor in the office in order to get my work done. And after that experience, I realized, you know what, this consulting thing is not my thing. And the push factor were really strong in my company. And I happened to have a friend who said, hey, why don't you come join this company in the peninsula? I said, oh, okay. And then I just left. So it happened to me early on in my career. This one, push factor, you're not happy. But pull factors are very weak, meaning there's not much options out there. I call this quadrant God's duck, not God milk, okay? God's duck. This is actually you feel kind of stuck, right? It's like, okay, where am I? What am I gonna do? I'm not happy. There's nothing out there. I actually think this quadrant requires a lot of wisdom from God. This may be a quadrant. It's like in the valley of shadow of death kind of quadrant. It could be a quadrant that actually builds your perseverance. Because if you think about the criteria, are you in a position to actually just pack up and leave without a job? You ask yourself, do I have a family I have to feed? If that's the case, I mean, the practical needs kind of trumps, right? You don't want to make, I want to say stupid decision, but sometimes people make stupid decisions, and then they cause so much stress on the family. So you ask yourself, what can you afford to lose? Or are you in the passion kind of journey? It's like, you know what? I'm kind of done. I have a full career. I'm about to retire. And you know what? I'm okay to just, and I'm financially kind of free. I'm okay to leave and just kind of pursue my passion. And that's okay too. Mm-hmm. But this God's duck question, duck quadrant, oftentimes kind of forces you to really think what is important and whether or not you can stick it out. So it's no longer God's duck. It's like sticking it out, meaning like persevere. So think about if you're in this quadrant. Now, I'll move to this. This is the negative, meaning your pull factors are very weak and your push factors are also very weak, which means I'm actually okay at my work. I don't really have a lot of forces to really get, like, push me out of my job because I like it. You know, it's not bad. I work for Google. I'm not saying I work for Google. I work for Google, free food, great commute, great package, on-site gym, all of these amenities, right? But at the same time, you also have very low pull factor. There's also nothing out there. For this one, I actually call it complacency versus content. I hope I spell it right. Complacency versus content. This is a quadrant where you could be, there's a danger to being a frog in a warm bath. You know, a frog in a warm bath is like you just kind of cruise and go under the radar, and you might be okay for a period of time. But after a while, you will see other colleagues moving up, and you're like, why am I still here? Because you probably, instead of being content, you're being complacent. You don't want to be complacent at work. I'm in HR, but I don't really do the traditional HR where I do other kind of lines of the HR, but my head of HR, and she's very famous, she's always encouraging us to always re-engineer yourself. Always re-engineer your JD. The JD that people that you're hired into, you could be like a software engineer, or you could be a finance manager, like that JD doesn't really, like, it probably go obsolete after a couple of years. In order to add value to the company, you have to re-engineer and say, how do I rewrite my JD
so that I could actually add value for myself and also for the company. So always have something called a growth mindset. You know, there is a really great book by Carol Dweck called Mindset, and she's a professor at Stanford. A lot of learning and development professionals use that mindset. Growth mindset basically saying they don't believe that your skills are like born with. You know, there's a lot saying, oh, you know, she's naturally talented and that's why she's great at drawing. The growth mindset means, yeah, you're not good at drawing, but you know what? If you work hard, you can be good at it. So don't ever use, oh, I'm not born with this skill as an excuse to not try. Always have the growth mindset, and I call it in Chinese IQ dingsan, right? You know, you always have that, you always find a silver lining in any situation that you're in, so that you can never be indispensable. You know, at a workplace, everybody could be very dispensable, but how do you add value and stay at your current job is to show that you're always learning and growing. Content, because you can always be content. Content is actually a state and a phase that you are actually at peace and you know what you're doing is in God's will. I mean, I can share with you kind of different journeys, but I just want to call out, strive to be on the content mode versus the complacency mode. And the content mode also, you know, kind of requires your growth mindset and always kind of re-engineer yourself. So this is a quadrant. Now the last quadrant is when your push factors are low, meaning you're pretty happy, but you have a very strong pull factors. What would you name this quadrant? That means you're happy, but then your friends are like, hey, you know, John, I you know, there's a great job right there, and it's like, you know, you're gonna get a bigger title, bigger salary, and come over and join me. That kind of scenario. But what is it?
Double
choice, okay. Any other? I mean, I there's no right or wrong. I just call it, you want to take a picture? I call it, is grass always greener quadrant. I am sure if, you know, many of you probably we have experienced this quadrant before. Is grass always greener? I have to say, sometimes it is. But I, for whatever reason, I witness more friends going through saying, gosh, grass is not always greener. And some people made very costly mistake for leaving the company for another thing, and they lost a lot of not just monetary, you know, values, but also the relationship they built, the stress that they add on as a result of the new opportunity. The grass always greener is, you know, all of these requires a lot of wisdom from God, but I think this one in particular is very important because you could be struggling with some worldly priorities. Mm-hmm. You need to ask yourself, kind of go back to the priorities, right? Why am I moving? Why am I making that move? If I am very happy, my boss trusts me, I'm happy with my job, even though that new position is gonna give me a bigger title, maybe bigger salary. But is that extra 20,000 or 30,000 gonna add more happiness and stability in my life? You know, is that extra, you know, 20 miles, you know, commute going to add that work-life integration that I want when I have young kids to drop off and stuff like that? You kind of have to go back to those criteria and help yourself ask this question. But if the answer is yes, you know what? The pull factor is like, that new job is next to my house, and it's like, the boss is much better, and then whatever. Yeah, maybe, you know what? Then maybe you're kind of like, here, clear decision, no problem. But kind of think through those factors, and don't use pay or money as your sole criteria. I'm actually in this field, I calculate people's I figure out how much they make and stuff like that. I have learned that money never keeps an employee. Mm-hmm. You will always be attracted and enticed by a bigger pay. You're never satisfied. You know, I think you need to draw a line and say, you know what, this is kind of what I need to meet my practical needs and achieve whatever, you know, goals I have. But beyond that, they're like bonuses. They're like icing on the cake. And am I willing to forego some of my stability and forego some of my values in exchange for those extra dollars? So my practical reason is like, don't ever pursue the higher pay purely because of higher pay. Now, I guess my question here is, which quadrant are you in right now? I want you to think about that. You got stuck, okay. You guys don't have to share, but maybe if you're already naturally in a circle, maybe spend a few minutes, if you don't mind sharing, which quadrant are you in? Are you in the clear decision quadrant? Are you in the got stuck quadrant? Are you in the complacency versus content quadrant? Are you in the is grass always greener quadrant? And what can you do to help yourself to be, you know, I guess to have a more clarity in what to do if you're on a particular quadrant, right? Anybody want to share? Maybe one or two people?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very happy with what I'm doing. There's a lot of other choices. Career-wise, I'm going to retire. So I'm not choosing salary, position, but over the other choice, I have a lot more power to do what I want to do. And right now, I'm senior technologist, but I still have to do whatever company wants. I don't have a lot of time to do what I want to do.
Your passion.
But I'm very important for all this company I work with. I'm very happy with. And but the thing is, this one called Dilama is they all have their good aspect. And for example, the other job I got to maybe time to stay at home is much smaller, fewer. Even I'm my kids all grown up, I still want to stay with my wife and my. So I know at this point it's very hard to make decisions. So I missed a lot of opportunity already. I still have a lot of opportunity to come to me. So I just every year I just keep thinking what I should do. I have probably a lot of people like me. So this is hard.
Yes.
Actually, I think I'm at the complacency
quadrant.
Yeah, I've been in my role for a long time. I won't say how many years. I don't think I've been developing like new skills, but I'm just comfortable there. I think what I need to do is just keep updating the. Actually, I see people moving up and then still staying there. I think what I need to do is just keep updating the job description, like you said, and push myself into the growth.
Yeah, I don't know if you read the article. Microsoft's HR, I think Kathleen Hogan, I think that's her name. She's changing the company from know-it-all to learn-it-all. So you will see there is a shift in the HR world and also how corporate America is functioning. It's not about knowing everything, it's around learning everything. So the learning component is so important. And the way I learn through my daughters because they are so savvy in whatever technologies, right? I also learn through interns. You know, we have a lot of younger people in my company and I would volunteer to coach them. And they will share with me things I'm like, oh my God, this is what generation is doing, I have no idea. So really connect, you know, we talked about during lunchtime around how do you build relationship, not just around influencing too, but also learn from other generations, the cross-generational learning, so that you could be up to date with kind of what's going on. So the learning aspect is very important. If your company offers a learning fund or some sort of education assistance, I encourage you to leverage that. Those are like benefits that you can leverage and to up your skill. Maybe one more question? Yes?
Just one comment on the learning account. So I work for a company that has this learning account, and I've been working for the company for like 13 years. I pretty much never use it.
Oh, the learning
my company
account.
selling our site,
oh,
you know, for, to another company, and then we won't have opportunity to use that money. So just you know, something to share, like for everybody, if you have the opportunity to use kind of this kind of money,
yeah,
it's a good opportunity. You never know what, you know, next day what's going to happen.
You know, my husband and I, we always joke around. He spent so much money on his education. I spent basically zero money on my education. He got an MBA in Kellogg, and he spent lots of money. He said, "I don't know where the ROI goes." You know, when you spend so much money in a very, you know, pretty well known MBA school. I actually leveraged my company's learning fund to do my MBA while working in Hong Kong, and my caveat is, you know. Learning is not around just going to Ivy Leagues or whatever. It's really learning things like, you know, right now, I've signed up for an EDEO class. I don't, anybody heard of IDEO, EDEO? EDEO is a design thinking company based in Palo Alto. They are really known about creativity, design thinking, how do you create collaborative, like how do you create or infuse creativity in collaboration. So they have a lot of online modules, and like even though I have been doing this, but I like to learn things. I've just signed up for it, and I'm going through a course right now. And I'm also been I put in a course called coaching as well. Coaching is, I don't know if anybody knows, the CTI is a very well-known institute about coaching. Is how do you develop conversational skill? How do you coach people so that they could be their best? You know, that they could be their, they could actually optimize a skill set. So there are so many opportunities that you guys can look for and research at your company that could, that is relevant to your work. You know, maybe engineering, you need to learn AI, machine learning stuff, but also soft skill, like communication, presentation is so important. How you frame a conversation. So the way to move up or the way to connect is, you know, is the soft skill as well, right? How do you build that relationship? So go ahead and really leverage. If there's anything you learn, just go home, look at your company's website and see if they have an education fund that you can tap into, and talk to your manager about that. All right. I think we're ending early. I'm here to talk to people if you need to, but thank you for coming.